COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
I do hope you can enjoy this podcast. Quite a bit of it was done before the game in Fulham yesterday. We've got some good guests on it, and we've got some good guests after it as well. And yeah, it was disappointing. Manchester United have not won in any of the first two league games. Goal scoring is still an issue. Disappointing because the team started so well against Fulham. First 15 minutes were particularly good. And then Bruno Fernandes missed a penalty, which is pretty rare. I think he's missed 5 out of 27, something like that. And then United went ahead. And then Fulham equalised, United sat back. So it all felt pretty deflating walking away from Craven Cottage after the game. So before we get into the podcast, a couple of things. Transfer window, it's still open. I expect it to be busy. United need to move players on. United need to get money in and not just sort of sell on fees. You know, there's mad ones like if Andreas Pereira moves, United have got a clause on him, for example, and he may go back to play in Brazil. But United need to sort out Jadon Sancho, Garnacho, Antony. And my understanding is none of these deals are as advanced as is being reported, i.e. nothing is close right now. And that may change. It may change over a couple of days. But United, I say need to get a move on, but can't really control the situation because United have got a set price, for example, for Garnacho, and United are not prepared to buckle. Some compromise may be needed by the players, by the agent, by the buying club, by the selling club, and that's just the art of negotiation. So right back in June, I said I expected the final week to be busy, and I stick by that. What do I think will happen? I think if United had a good offer for Rasmus Højlund, he will go, whether that's on loan or a sale. I would be surprised if Rasmus Højlund is here at the end of the transfer window. And that may include the Turkish transfer window, which is a week later. I would be surprised if Kobbie Mainoo was not a United player, but I wouldn't be stunned if a big offer came in for him. Jadon Sancho, he seems the one most reticent to actively engage. Or his agent, so I'm not getting a sense. You know, there's been clear interest for him, but he's not bit, as is his right, to be fair. But it's a pretty sad situation. You would hope that someone as talented as him can and should be playing football. Antony, Real Betis want him, but they've got financial limitations. Antony will clearly be attractive to somebody. So United need to get the best fee in for him as possible. Malacia is training by himself in Manchester, a non-league club, a very good non-league club. So it is a difficult one. People say to me, United need to buy now. Yep, a goalkeeper. Absolutely looking at a goalkeeper and a midfielder. So United wanted Baleba from Brighton, but I always said that would be doubtful given Brighton's demands. I've not really changed that. But if United are getting money in from sales, then the landscape changes. So there's lots of moving parts here for Manchester United. I think it will be busy the final week or so of the transfer window. And you just got to watch this space. I wouldn't even be surprised if loads of activity went right to the last day. This is just a game of poker. So who's working for Manchester United? There's basically, it's a circle of like four people. Matt Hargreaves, who I'm told is a very good negotiator. By people they've got nothing to do with Manchester United as well. You've got the CEO, Omar Brada. You've got Jason Wilcox, director of football. And Ruben Amorim also has a say. But he's had his say because he's decided which players he wants and which players he doesn't want. So the next game is against Grimsby. Enjoy this podcast. Had a nice day in Fulham. Spoiled by Manchester United not winning. We're looking for a sponsor for this podcast. If you're interested, get in touch with us at uwsmag@yahoo.co.uk. We can give you all the numbers. And, you know, we're nearly on our 700th episode of this pod. So we'll start this pod walking across Putney Bridge from the house of Alex, who let me park his car in Putney. He's a professional footballer, currently playing for Portland Timbers in the United States, which meant there was a free place on his drive. Welcome to the latest United We Stand podcast, 698th podcast that we've done. I'm walking through Putney towards Craven Cottage, which is obviously the home of Fulham. I didn't have anywhere to... I've driven here for the first time ever because I've got to take a flight after and I've got to hire a car, blah, blah, blah. And I said I needed somewhere to park my car. And 15 different people came forward and offered to leave the car at the house close to Fulham, which is pretty incredible and very kind of all of you. And Adam, who's a professional footballer, he lived closest. So I'm just making that walk. Not quite as short as Adam suggested it might be, but I'm not going to hold that against him because I appreciate it. I'm walking with Jim White, long-time United We Stand writer, journalist for The Telegraph, and Justin Morehouse is a Manchester lad. He's a well-known comedian. And
we've
United We Stand purchaser, which is good. And they've both started a new podcast themselves, which we mentioned in United We Stand. What's it called, Jim?
It's called The Good Days Are Coming. I don't know where we got that title from.
And what's it about?
So the idea is, there's a load of these podcasts out that talk about tactical analysis from fans. And we realise, even though Jim's a football writer, we don't know enough about football to talk technically about it. So it's the match-going experience. How you feel about going to the game. It's always the morning after the night before. You know, you always feel differently, don't you? A night after a night with a lover. You know, reflection over croissant. You know, you might think about that. So that's the idea is, and we have a little section there called the away end. So we get a fan from the opposition. Win, lose or draw, they can have a go. A bit like in your magazine where you speak to away fans, you know, we ask them what's their opinion of United.
Yeah.
It's always fascinating, isn't it, what people's other clubs' opinion is of United. And most match-going fans and good fans normally have a very positive view of United. Football fans understand. So yeah, so we're giving it a go. Just a bit of fun, really. I've known Jim for ages, not as long as you've known him. And he's a good guy. And then we've got Noz as well. Nuruddin Chowdhury, also known as Bearded Genius. And he's very funny. And socially media aware.
How would you describe the area that we are walking through, Putney, towards Craven Cottage? Because
it's a bit Altrincham, but a bit nicer.
Yeah.
I also do think it was funny that if you were a Fulham fan living in Putney and asked somebody, do you live near Old Trafford, can I leave my car? You'd have had more than 15 scallies going, yeah, you can park your car on my drive. No problem, mate. It's a nice area. It's got all the chains. It's got your Wagamamas. It's got your Five Guys.
Go on, carry on reading.
Costas. It's nice. This is a nice area, isn't it, of South West London, is it?
Yeah, leafy.
Leafy South.
How are you feeling about Manchester United going into this game? I think it's a huge game.
It's a big game, isn't it? We need to put a marker down, I think. I think if we'd have scored last weekend and we'd have drawn 1-1, we'd have come away disappointed that we didn't win. But I think this is a game we have to win. You know, the money, the club have put some money where their mouth is. I just loved it last week when the ball just got launched up and the target men were getting the ball, controlling it, turning it and running towards goal. I thought, that's novel, that's exciting. But I'm positive, but I'm always positive. I'm broadly positive all the time as a United fan. I'm too positive. My son, who's 28, he's the opposite, he's negative. Oh, done with him, done with him, done with him. Me, they'll never let me down.
One of my best friends is a pessimist and he thinks you're better because You're never wrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
But equally, for the 35 years that I've done United We Stand, I've had people coming up to me going, I'm done with United, or I've reached my tipping point with United. This is my last season. And then they'll list a multitude of reasons why, and it might be ticket prices or whatever. And then you see them at the start of next season, and you go, wait a minute, in February you told me this is your last ever season.
Yeah.
And they sort of sheepishly turn and walk away.
But how can you? How can you walk away? It's like, because I'm a...
Well, like the Glazers would be a legitimate reason.
Yeah. But it's like, as a comedian, I've often said, like, how can you say I used to be a clown? How can you say I used to go to United? And no matter how tenuous the link is with the club, that season ticket that you own, that's your connection, isn't it? That's you. That's your umbilical cord to the club. And if you let go of it, you're gone forever.
Jim White, how are you feeling about the game today and about Manchester United in general as we cross? Is this Putney Bridge?
This is Putney Bridge, yes.
Do you know anything about Putney, Jim, or Putney Bridge?
I don't know anything about Putney Bridge, but the last time...
Did you not live around here as a young journalist?
As a young man, I was... Yes, I bought one of those houses with my first with my first paycheck. The last time I came to Craven Cottage was to see... It was to report on Fulham against Spurs. And I was walking along the towpath here, and there was a boatload of Spurs fans. They'd chartered a boat to get to the ground, and they were just yelling abuse at anybody. And they saw Fulham fans walking along there, yelling abuse at them. Fair enough. And then a rowing eight went by, and you see a lot of those. Not today, but there's a lot of rowers on this bit. My God, they gave them dogs abuse. It was hilarious. I stood and watched as this poor rowing eight, because they were going quicker than the boat that the Spurs fans, as they came level with them, they gave them so much abuse. So it's a place where cultures meet, shall we say.
Yeah.
Football fans probably are a very rare minority around here. It is smart. It's very smart. And Fulham kind of reflects that, doesn't it, as a club?
Let me just take a picture. So what about United, Jim?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, that, after Erik ten Hag bought loads of players from the Eredivisie, what Amorim's done is buy a couple of guys, hardened, experienced Premier League guys. He needs them to hit the ground running. Because he needs these results, otherwise, he hasn't got any time. He's got to get it right now. If he doesn't get it right, if this is a disappointing game, he's already on the slide towards the dark period around November, when I think he's probably the limit.
There's a lot of goodwill towards him, no?
At the moment. A lot of goodwill.
Okay.
I totally agree there's a lot of goodwill, Andy, but that has a limit, and that limit is dependent on what goes on the pitch. And they've got to start delivering. And there were moments in Arsenal, it was great. I mean, the difference between the Arsenal performance and last year was that so often they lost, but it was a really bad performance. At least they lost this time, and you felt there were green shoots of recovery. But those green shoots have got to start growing quick.
But even though United have been terrible, they've won every year at Fulham.
I know, incredible. Incredible. I've been to most of those games. Bruno won with a penalty, was it? Right at the last minute a couple of years ago. I saw them under Ollie here, where they were absolutely brilliant. Anthony Martial scored a belter of a goal. It is. You're right. It's a ground where things go well for them. Be interesting. It's also a ground where there's always a lot of United fans in amongst the home fans.
Yeah. I mean, I know people who are not Fulham fans who have season tickets at Fulham just to watch Premier League football, and they may be Manchester United fans as well, and it's accessible. But there's also a lot of problems here with ticket prices. Got the new stand opening up.
Tell you about the new stand.
This is a place when I spoke to Sir Jim Ratcliffe in November, he opined that Manchester United should not be cheaper than Fulham, and I disagreed with him on that, because as we've seen walking through this area, the demographic is very different to most areas of Manchester.
Oh yeah, I mean it's not a legitimate comparison. Maybe you could say for the corporate end of it, you should be charging the same as Fulham, because obviously there's all the heritage and the prestige and so on that Manchester United have got. But there should be no comparison between. The interesting thing about Fulham is, it's got this lovely old stand, the Johnny Haynes stand, beautiful, beautiful old place. And then they've got this new stand opposite it at the Riverside, which was being built by the same people who built the new...
Sagrada Familia.
Yeah, Sagrada Familia, exactly, yeah. It's taken years. No, it was the same company that built the new Anfield Road stand at Anfield. And they went bust, and there's just been so many delays. And I've been coming here to report on matches for about 4 or 5 years, and it looks as though it's finished, but it's not full, and I don't really know why that is. It's not because they can't sell the tickets. Anyway, Justin's there today, so...
Is there a toilet in the park, mate?
Yeah,
just on the right.
Thank you. We've just gone past a place selling burgers for a tenner. They are dressed up as Aberdeen Angus burgers.
Right. Well, that's it. That tells
you. It ain't a tenner at Carlisle.
It's not a tenner. It won't be at Grimsby either, but then they probably won't
sell
burgers.
Better example, giving United a plane there on Wednesday night.
Maybe they'll go up then. There's a prime example, so Jim ought to pay heed to. Okay, look at the cost comparison of the burgers on the street.
Yeah.
And then you can understand why there's a difference between ticket prices.
There is such thing as a McDonald's Big Mac Index, isn't there, around the world?
There is. But also, Andy...
And Greggs do that.
Do Greggs do it?
Different prices in different areas.
So, I noticed that the ones sausage roll in the airport's a bit more expensive.
Yeah, well, that's obvious in the airports and service stations.
But it's still cheap for an airport for a service station.
But they vary from postcode even in Manchester.
Really?
Prices, yeah, depending on the sort of what people can afford.
Why do you think Greggs is so successful?
Well, number of reasons. They know the market very well. Secondly, very, very consistent. And thirdly, and not many people talk about this, they treat their staff incredibly well.
Did they?
Yeah, really good, very good employers.
Right.
You wasn't expecting an answer,
was
you?
No, I'm just not even sure. I'm actually interested in this, but I'm not sure where I'm going next. I can have a score prediction for today.
Score prediction from the Greggs.
What's your favourite item at Greggs? 3-1, you
said. Me? I'm vegan, so the vegan sausage roll, I'm very grateful. Anything
the famous vegan
that
sausage
winds
roll.
Up Piers Morgan is brilliant.
Jim, do you go to Greggs?
I have been to Greggs. I often go to Greggs to get coffee at the service stations because I'm not going to pay Starbucks £4.50 for a coffee.
Yeah.
I was in Dublin once when I first started. I was a comedian, and I used to have loads of jokes about Greggs. Such bad stuff. But I said to the taxi driver, "What's the equivalent of like Greggs here?" He's going, "What do you mean?" I went, "You know, a place where you get like sausages and sausage rolls and that." And he goes, "Oh, Dad, that'll be Bewley's." And Bewley's in Ireland is not Greggs. It's more. That's more like Aunt Bessie's. You know, it's a really nice place. So I'm on stage in Dublin going. And there's these right tramps, you know, in Bewley's. And they're all going, no.
Really? So you just got it totally wrong.
Nearly as bad as when Peter Kay said to Graham Norton once, when he first started doing stand-up, what's that gay area in Manchester called? Meaning the village. And Peter told him. So Graham Norton's on stage and he goes, anyway, earlier today, I was in Bury. And the audience are going, and? He's going, you know, I was in Bury. And they're all going, tell the rest of the story, mate.
And he'd just been blagged.
He's just been blagged. He told him the gay area was called Bury.
I don't even know why I should mention this, but Chris Martin the other day in Hull, Hull KR Stadium last Monday night. East Hull is a pretty socially deprived area. And he comes on and he says... And big thanks to the football club. I'm like, no, this is rugby. This is rugby territory. And he just put his foot right into it. Not for the first time with one of his shows.
Great. Look at them people having an affair. That would have done it.
Yeah. He did say that. Cause someone had a flag saying that they come from Boston. And he's like, oh that clusterfuck. Finally, which United players most excite you about this season? And who could you live with... leaving the club, even in this transfer window, should I say, beyond the obvious? Because, you know, I don't think Jadon Sancho, for example, has got a future at the club.
Well, I've liked Brian Mbeumo for a while. I saw him play at Brentford a few times. Just thought he was great, really strong, really quick. Very excited to see him. I also think he's got an ego. He was
a chess player, you know.
Is he?
And a pianist.
Oh, wow. Even so.
Oh, that's true.
But I think, you know, he was the big fish in the small pond at Brentford. I think he fancies being the big fish in the big pond.
Yeah.
I see that in him. It's very exciting to see him. I worry about Maynou. I love Maynou. I think he might, if an offer came in the next week, I think they might get rid of him. And that would be a shame.
Similarly, if Maynou went, I'd be devastated. I think I'm on a small minority of people that are really upset that Marcus Rashford's left United. I understand it for footballing reasons and financial reasons, for his reasons and everything else. But I think Maynou and Rashford, even though we're all gnarly now and in our middle age, they still represent the child in us, the one that, you know, you thought you could be. We could have been Rashford, couldn't we? We could have been the local boy who played for United. I think it's a shame. And if Maynou goes, that'll be a kick in the balls for me.
And McTominay, not local, McTominay, but academy.
But still, you know, Lancaster,
yeah,
still kind of, you know.
Lancashire, isn't it?
Yeah. I just think, I think I'd be disappointed if he goes.
And if there was a team this season without any academy product, would that be a big issue for you, given the long record United have?
It's a long record. We've only been talking about it for a relatively short period of time.
True.
And I think with the fact that the benches are so big now, that we might not, that might not be a problem.
Yeah.
But my, you know, my nephew, Jack Morehouse, he's not. he's got on loan, so three of them got on loan, which is a good thing. I don't worry about that thing. I thought if it was going to go in recent years, you thought it would have gone under Mourinho, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Like somebody said to Mourinho, you know, there's been a player since 1940. And he'd gone, well, I'm going to change that. And I'm looking forward to seeing, is that you're asking?
Yeah.
Similar, but I think that front three, if they're playing together in a dynamic threesome, they look really exciting, don't they?
Mm. Thank you for your time, both of you. Best wishes with the podcast. I'm with Digger outside the away end. Hi, Rob.
All right, mate.
And Digger went to Grimsby last time round. How old are you, Digger, now?
I'm 86.
You're 86 years young in a month. You went to Grimsby. When was it? My Uncle Charlie played.
Yeah, I know. It'd be 1946, 47.
How old were you?
I was seven.
And your dad took you?
Yeah.
How'd you get there?
I think we were on a coach called Makinson's, if I'm not mistaken.
Do you have any memory of going to Grimsby in 47?
The only thing I can remember about it is seeing all these fishing boats.
Wow.
Because I'd never been to the coast before, you know, just after the war. And then my dad took me to Old Trafford on my birthday. That was the first time I saw United at Main Road. And then from then, I became a fan. That 48 side, Crompton, Carey, Ashton, Anderson, Chilton, Cockburn, Delaney, Morris, Rowley, Pearson and Mitten.
Yes.
Charlie.
Yeah.
Brilliant footballer.
Was he?
He scored one hat-trick and he scored four in the game and three were penalties.
You know he was Fulham's record transfer signing.
He came was,
here.
Yeah.
He was a big... I've got a family who were born round here because
after
of...
After he went to Bogota,
yeah,
he came back hoping he'd get back into United side. But I think Busby said, you've made your bed on it, you can lie on it and go.
He went
to Fulham.
Mansfield as manager. Yeah. He played in a great Fulham team here with Johnny Ains and Jimmy Hill was here as well. So when the family lived in West London for a time while he was here before he went up to Mansfield. How are you feeling about United this season, Digger?
I'm very hopeful. I think we're going to finish in the top five.
Yeah.
And we're going to win one of the Cups.
Right.
Because it looks as though he's... The game against Arsenal, I think, was very unlucky. And it looked good. And they defended brilliantly. And their goal, for my money, should have been disallowed.
Yeah.
You know.
You think there was a foul?
I do.
Yeah. I didn't when I watched it in the stadium, but looking back, I can see why more people say that. People who had the benefit of watching it again and again. Can I have a prediction for today, please?
3-1. For United.
And which players are exciting you at the moment, or are you looking forward to this season because it's still quite young, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I've not really seen them all, other than, you know, the ones that are regular players, but these two new signings, they look as only what to go forward, and I'm hoping that they'll start scoring goals.
Brilliant. Lots of them. Thank you. It's 20 minutes gone. It's a beautiful day now in West London, and
United fans are singing for Ruben Amorim. United have started brightly. There have been chances at both ends, but Matias Cunha's had three different chances to score inside the first 40 minutes. You can hear the Reds here now. So the United lineup is by and day. I thought that would be the case. I said that. Lenny Yoro, Matias, Gillick, Luke Shaw, this is the central three. Ahmad on the right, Doug on the left, Casemiro and Bruno in midfield, with Cunha and Mason Mount ahead centrally. Brian and Bueno on the right, and Bumo, sorry, on the right. So at the moment, it's Mason Mount and Cunha, sort of both the most advanced players at the moment. United started well. I'm slightly nervous because until United are winning, until United score a goal, I'll stay like this because I can see there's really clear patterns of play. There's a brilliantly worked long ball from Bayande to Cunha, which almost resulted in the opening goal. But we haven't had the opening goal yet, so I think the game's still quite early on. I think I need to be settled down by the team. And I think the team needs settling down themselves. There's a lot looks right about the way this team is set up. But we need to win games. So Casemiro now plays it out to Luke Shaw. It's good watching Luke Shaw playing and looking fit and strong. Bruno Fernandes. United ends a hard ticket outside. We managed to have one person get the ticket. Obviously for face value. There was a lot of people without tickets. Carry me back to just track the whole end. Listen to that away end. Listen to it. United have gone ahead. So we're 15 minutes into the second half. Two early subs in the second half. Tactical. So Casemiro and Ahmad both went off. Mount dropped back, Sesko came on up top. And then a ball's coming from a corner. I thought Luke Shaw had scored it first time. And I was about to say something like, Shaw rises like a salmon across the river from where he was born. But I've just watched it back and Shaw definitely didn't score it. It's looking like an own goal. United needed to score. And they've scored. Vital goal. Vital timing. Let's see if United can see this out now. Or maybe give some more confidence to attack again.
Hi, I'm Geert Langendorf. I am the UK football correspondent for Algemeen Dagblad. Or actually, it's Algemeen Dagblad, but that would be a bit too hard to pronounce for your English audience. And I've been here in the UK since 2014.
With Louis van Gaal.
With Louis van Gaal, when he came in, yes.
I reckon I can pronounce where you work perfectly if you tell me one more time.
Algemeen Dagblad.
Algemeen Dagblad.
That's almost perfect, yeah. All right.
People often say I've got a South Dutch accent and I'm talking nonsense and I shouldn't even be smiling because I feel a little bit disappointed after Manchester United failed to win against Fulham. You're more neutral than I am. What were your observations today?
It's actually quite disappointing. I had expected, particularly after what I'd heard from the summer tour, that United were on the up, that things were clicking into place, that Emery was finally putting his stamp on the tactics, on the players. And today you couldn't really see much of that, particularly in midfield. They were weak. Of course, De Ligt was doing all right. He was actually quite decent. I was hoping for Zirkzee to come on. But then again, they didn't necessarily need attackers. They needed more midfielders to actually create chances. Mm-hmm. So quite underwhelming. So I really hope that this is not kind of a template for what the rest of the season will look like for United.
You obviously covering it from a Dutch angle, what would be the general perception with Matthijs de Ligt and with Xerxes as well?
Well, with the World Cup coming up next year, de Ligt, his progress has not gone unnoticed. Yeah. He's clearly making strides, he's really finding his feet, and he's become one of the leaders at United, which will be a positive for Ronald Koeman, the national manager. He's lost his place, or at least he's not or a starter anymore.
To who?
That it differs. At least yeah. Virgil van Dijk is number one.
Who's he?
Virgil van Dijk. I just think it's strange that you mentioned that. I kind of forgot. I think he plays for a team.
Stoke. No, I can't remember.
Could well be the case. And but Zirkzee, that's going to be a bit of an issue because
he needs to be playing.
We lack strikers. We don't have any strikers whatsoever. And he looked to be the one to finally fill that gap up front. And he's not playing. He clearly needs minutes. Apparently, he said that he's going to stay at United, but if it was going to be like this for him. It would be a massive worry because they will obviously stop him developing into the player that everybody thought he would become. And right now, he's not playing at all.
Can I ask you about United's Dutch managers? We've had two in the last decade. One was the reason you moved to Manchester, and Louis van Gaal. More recently, Erik ten Hag. Did people feel that ten Hag was treated fairly by Manchester United? What's the view on ten Hag?
It kind of depends on who you talk to, but unlike van Gaal, who is larger than life and who is such a big character, big manager, that he didn't need any support. It just went wrong and people accepted it. It didn't go well. With Ten Hag, at first people backed him a lot. I didn't understand the mess that was going on around at United. Blamed the circumstances. But then as time progressed, people did get the feeling that he was slightly out of his depth. He could not command respect that's needed at a club at the stature of United. So,
wow, there's a massive Emirates going over. Anyway, go on.
So, and now, of course, he's at Leverkusen. Immediately lost. And, now kind of the people who still had their rose-tinted glasses on are probably seeing what I saw when he was in his, particularly in his second season, that it wasn't going to go well and he's probably not the right manager for United. He's no Arne Slot, let me put it like that.
And Van Gaal?
What's he doing?
Van Gaal is, he pops up every now and again, particularly for charity, shares his views every now and again, but he's not so much involved in football anymore. Luckily, because his health was a bit of an issue, he mentioned not too long ago that he is completely recovered from quite a severe illness and he's enjoying life and spends quite a bit of time in Portugal.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
What about the players who played in Holland? So Lisandro Martinez, I mean, he's been injured, but he did well for Ajax. Antony obviously did well for Ajax as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, particularly Antony is an interesting one because even at Ajax, people were fairly surprised that people covering Ajax were fairly surprised because his stats were not remarkable. I think he had two assists and two goals this season prior to his move to United, which didn't necessarily make him an ideal option for United. And then the price tag, which was 100 million euros, I think it was 81 million pounds, that looked ludicrous to many. And of course, people were quite pleased for him that he did quite well at Betis when he was on loan. But at the same time, people pointed at Ten Hag, why did you use players that came out of your black book instead of use your influence, use your charisma, like big managers usually do? They all have to do is pick up the phone and say, "Would you like to play for me? I think you'd be an asset," and they come. He clearly didn't feel confident enough. That is kind of the perception about Antony. Martinez is obviously rated because he did really well before his injury. People were surprised that he went for him, but he did well. So, in that respect,
I recently interviewed a player who's playing in Holland, Zidane Iqbal. He's a Manchester lad. He's playing at Utrecht, and he had a difficult first season, but last season seemed to be much, much better for him.
Also, it helps that they have a great manager in Ron Jans. He's more nice of an senior manager. I think he's in his early 60s, and he's known for his calmness, his empathy. He's strict but understands youngsters. he's fairly modern in that sense. And players who need a bit of a cuddle or a compliment, he's definitely their man. And he's thriving with players who were more or less cast offs at other clubs and turns them into proper players again, assets. And so I understand why Iqbal was doing so well right now.
Is there still significant interest in Manchester United and English football in Holland, or does it depend on the character? So Arne Slot, for example, is at Liverpool, so that's a bigger story than people who might be at Manchester United now that Ten Hag has gone.
Yeah, well, the last 6 months of last season, it was more schadenfreude, really. Mm. So look, Ten Hag is gone and it's still going terribly.
Going worse.
It's going even worse, yes. And of course, Arne Slot with winning the league, and he's grabbing all the headlines, and people are definitely are focusing on him more so than United. But United still garners a lot of interest because it is a massive club. Mm. You know, no matter what they do, their history. So they still show the games on pay per view.
Really?
People still tune in. People still want to read everything about them. Of course, right now Liverpool is, unfortunately for Manchester United fans, slightly more of an attraction, but Man United is still massive. So it can just change just like that. If they start winning, people will be knocking on Old Trafford's door to see if there's any tickets available.
Thank you for your time and best wishes.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.